Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Ayin Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Please take note that today's shiur begins at the top of Ayin Beis Amid Beis. Again, Daf Ayin Beis Amid Beis. At the Mishnah, at the top of the Amid. You'll see a double underline that highlights the expression Ad Shaloi, which is featured on the side under our Mivneh heading. That will become clear as we, of course, learn through the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Derech Talmidei Chachamim Ad Shelo Hoisa Bito Yoitza Me'etzlo. It's the way of Torah scholars regarding their daughters before their daughters marry, before they leave their domain. Omer Lo, the father, would say, Kol Nidorim Shenadart Besoch Beisi Harei Ein Muforin. All the vows that you vowed while in my house, they are absolved. V'chein habal, likewise with a husband, ad shelo tikones lirshuso, until she actually enters his domain, until they, we'll say, they consummate their marriage. Omer law, he says to her, kol nedarim shenadart ad shelo tikonsi lirshusi, all the vows that you made before entering my domain, harehein mufaran, they are hereby absolved. Shemishitikones lushuso, from the point at which they consummate their marriage, she enters the husband's domain, eino yochol lahafer, he can no longer absolve her of vows. There is a rule that we saw in our previous shir, ein habal mefer b'kodmin, a husband does not have jurisdiction over vows that took place before her entrance into his domain. There's a comment made by the Ran at the top of the page. Derech Tamidei Chachamim lefi shenara murasa, it is so with regard to a nara, a girl between 12 and 12 and a half, who is murasa. She's entered her first stage of marriage, the erusin stage. La'achar sheniseis, after she consummates the marriage, yefshur sh'teha forol nedorea, her vows that she had made previously cannot be absolved. So as a result of that, Darkun Shel Avu Baal, it's the way of the father and the Orus, the husband, Kishen Tamidei Chachamim, when you're dealing with Torah sages, Torah scholars, Lohofir Nidorea Kodim Shetinose, to absolve her of vows before she enters Nisuin. Uvigmor Meforash Hach Afora, the Gemara, we'll see that this needs to be explained. Is this a reference to vows before they even heard about them? In other words, a type of a disclaimer or announcement beforehand, or after they have already heard that of the vow that she took. And now we continue with the Gemara. But before we look into the text itself, we have a significant amount of markings. And on the side, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading. The crown shape is used to highlight Shalosh She'elois, three questions, Binyan Haforas Habal, regarding a husband and his ability to absolve the wife of vows. So just if you take a bird's eye view of the Gemara, so we have number one immediately, and numbers two and three are questions that will appear on Daf Ayin Gimel Amid Aleph. There's a double underline that highlights Shtei She'eloi Shel Romi Bar Chamo. There are two questions that Romi Bar Chamo raises, being in Tzurich Lishmiya Kedei Shabal Yuchal Ofer, regarding the need of hearing of the vow, the need of physically hearing of the vow, in order for a husband to be able to absolve. So, if once again, getting a bird's eye view, Rami Bar Chama appears here, part of question one, and he is also the questioner of question number two, third line from the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. After we start question number one, you'll notice that there are triangles that appear, and they're explained as well. These are Toshma, as highlighted. These are Arba Nisyonis, four attempts, Lifshoit Shele Rishona, to resolve the first question. Now, the Gemara. Boy, Rami Bar Chama. Baal, Mao Shiofer Belo Shmia. Can a husband annul a vow even without his having heard of the vow? Will an annulment have effect? We'll say he announces an annulment of vows before he even hears of it. The Rashi at the upper part of the page, Mao Shiofer Belo Shmia, Shiomar, that he would announce, Kol Nedarim Shenodra Ishti Yumuforin, all vows that my wife makes shall be absolved. Afagav de lo shoma bohen, even if he didn't hear of them. Vadinami ba'av, imotsi le mefer b'lo shmia, can he, the father, absolve without having heard? So now we take a look at the continuation of the Gemara. V'shoma isha. That is a quote from the Pasuk, which means that her husband heard. Davkahu, is it to be taken at face value, literally, in other words, exactly that he heard, oy lav davkahu, or it's not specifically that, and hence we'd be able to include the possibility of a vow being absolved even without his having heard of it. Omar Rova, Toshma. So Rova tries to conclude this question by citing our Mishnah. Derech Talmidei Chachamim, it's the way of Torah scholars, Ad Shelo Yotzos Bitoi Me'etzlo, prior to the daughter leaving his domain, Omer Lo, he announces, Kol Nedarim Shenadart B'soch Beisi, all vows that you took while in my house, Arei Hein Muforin, I declare them absolved. Well, V'ha Lo Shoma, you see, the father is absolving vows that he did not hear about. So the Pasuk, when it says Vishoma, it's Lav Dafka. It's not literal. It's not to be taken any heard. The Gemara rejects this conclusion and says, L'chi Shoma hu demefer. When he hears of the vow, he will annul it. We look at the Ran commentary. Across from here, L'chi Shama Hu Demefer, Kishi Yishma Acharkach Nedarim Shenodra Choyzu Mefer Oysan. When he hears later on about the Nedarim, the vows that she had vowed, he then will again Mefer, absolve them. The Gemara asks, in Cain, if that's the understanding, Kilo Shama Loma Leila Meymar, if he, at the early stage, before he heard about them, so then why is there any need for him to make the announcement that we see in the Mishnah? If you're telling me he's going to annul them later anyway, the Gemara answers, Ha komash malon, what the Mishnah is telling us is urche ditzur berabonin laduri. It is the urche, the way of Torah scholars to seek out, to check out laduri, to investigate whether there are vows. Before we continue, let's take a look at the Ran. The Ran, in Cain, ki lo shoma loma leila meymar, ma lo lahofer ala sofek haforo shena moelis. What's the point of issuing an absolution on the basis of a doubt that isn't even effective? Kevan shesofu lasu lahofer kishishma nidorel. Being that you're explaining that he's going to annul anyway when he hears of the vow. So what's the point in the Mishnah? So the Ran continues, Urchei tzumer abonan ladure, darkish shotem echomim v'chazor alea, v'lomar lo, kol nedorim shadar harein v'foren, kedei lachnisa b'dvorim. It's the way of Talmidei Chachomim that have daughters to engage in a neder discussion. And that's what the Mishnah represents. And through his talking about Nedorim, the Ron continues, Shemitoch kach, you know, yisenes elibo v'meras, neder bloni nodarti v'umefer. That through his discussing, through his initiating a discussion concerning Nedorim, she'll then remind herself, oh yeah, I made such and such a neder, such and such a vow. And at that point, the father, Talmud Chacham, will annul it. But at this point, we're saying that the annulment, the true annulment, is in fact only after the father literally hears of the vow, and not as we suggested above, that it's lav dafka. Well, let's try again. Toshma mi seifa. V'chein habal ad sheloi tikones l'rishuso omer la. Likewise, a husband makes an announcement before he consummates the marriage. Any nedarim that you may have made before entering my domain, I hereby annul. So we see that he doesn't have to actually have heard of the vow. The Gemara rejects that and says, Hocho nami di omer la l'chi shama na. Here too, the Orus is saying that, well, when I hear of the vow, then I will annul it. Toshma ha'imer li'ishto. A man says to his wife, Kol nidorim shitaduri ad she'ovoi mimokom ploni. All vows that you make until I come back from such a place. Harehein kayomen. I affirm those vows. Lo omar klum. That is of no value. It does not constitute a hakoma, a substantiation of her vows. However, if he says that all vows that you will vow until I come back from such and such a place, harehein mufarin, I hereby declare them absolved. Rabbi Lezer omer mufar. Rabbi Lezer says it's effective. Ah, v'holo shama. He didn't hear of the vows. He's making an announcement prior to her vowing. And yet you see that it is effective. That, according to Rabbi Lezer, the annulment works. The Gemara rejects this and says, Hochanami domar l'chi shamana. Here too, he's saying that when I will hear of the vow, so then and only then will it be annulled. The Gemara asks, "V'lomali min hashta?" Then why is there any point in saying now this announcement, "Lefi shama lefer lo"? When he hears the vow, so then let it be. Let him announce. Let him annul it then. Because what is he saying now? He's saying that any vows that you make by the time I come back from such and such a place, and I hear of the vow, so I am declaring it annulled. But you see that it's the annulment doesn't take hold until he actually hears of the vow. So if that's the case, so why does he announce now? Let him announce the annulment. Let him state his annulment when he hears of it. Mora answers, Kosovar, the husband figures, Dilma Matridna Ahishaita. I might be Matridna from the word Torud. I might be preoccupied with other things. Other things will be on my mind at that time. And with this announcement that he makes when he's of clarity of thought, when he's calm before his trip, it will take hold. When he hears the vow, it will take hold then retroactively based on his comment now. If we look in the Rosh commentary, Dilma Matridna Biyom Shmiya. The Rosh, by the way, is on the second of the wide lines under on the bottom of the page. On the day that he actually hears of it, if you're asking why doesn't he then make the annulment, because he might be torud, he might be preoccupied on the day that he hears the vav lo yeli pnai lahofer, and I won't have time to make the annulment. Therefore, he announces now the annulment and it will take effect retroactively upon his hearing of her vow. We continue. Toshma, ha'imer la'petroipus. Man says to his executor, he says, Kol nedarim shenoideres ishti mikan vi'ad she'ovoi mimokon ploni hafer. All vows that my wife makes from now until I come back from such and such a place, I want you to annul them. The hofer law, and the apotropos does the annulling. Yochli umuforen, could it be that they will be absolved? Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, Yisha yekimenu v'yisha yefireno, divrei Rabbi Yoshia. It's her husband's job to either substantiate the vow or to annul the vow. That's Rabbi Yoshia's approach, indicating that the husband's obligation is such, but it cannot be transferred to an executor. Omar loy Rabbi Yonason, Motsinu b'cholatar kula shlucho shalom kamoso. Rabbi Yonason says that we find throughout the Torah that a person's agent is as if the original party is doing the action. So if a husband can annul vows, his agent should be able to function in the same capacity. Vafilu Rabbi Yoshia lo komar lo mishum gzeres hakosef hu isha yikimenu v'isha yofenu. Even Rabbi Yoshia, who objected to the apotropos, it's only because of a specific gzeres hakosef, a specific Torah exegesis. Avol the kulei alma, but everyone holds shlucho shel adam kamoso. The emissary or the agent of a person is like the person himself. So that if not for the gzeres hakosuv, everyone would agree that the hafora described here, the annulment described in this source, would be an effective annulment. Avaha lo shmiale. There was an announcement of annulment made without having heard of the actual vow. And we see that it would have been effective according to everybody. The Rashi, toward the end, says, Vafili Rabbi Yoshia, Islay, the Shlucho Shalom Kamoso. Rabbi Yoshia also holds from the concept of an agent of an individual is like the original party. Ilav Mishum Dichtiv, Isha Yefiren, if not for the fact that Pasuk says that the husband must be the one to annul. Vehechi motzi mashvi shliach. How can you possibly appoint an agent called manshelo nodra, as long as she hasn't actually made the vow? Halo shama lenidra. He didn't hear of the vow. She hasn't made it yet. Elo lav. But rather, what do we see? Veshoma lav dafka. The veshoma of the pasuk that the husband heard is not specifically. It's not literally that. And as a result of the need to have actually heard as being non-binding, the idea of appointing a shaliach, of appointing an agent, is a possibility, is a reality, and that's how a person could appoint the shaliach. And as we're saying, technically, if not for the gzeres hakosev, even Rabbi Yoshia would have agreed with that. But as far as the need to hear the vow in order for an annulment to be valid, that is not the case. So if we were to stop here, then our conclusion would be that the word v'shoma of the pasuk is lav dafka. The Gemara answers or responds to this. Hocha nami, we return to the top of daf ayin gimel amud aleph. Well, here too, the omar lay, the husband is saying to the apotropos, "L'chishamano mefer lo." When you hear the vow, then mefer it. Then you annul it. So at this point, then we're reverting back to the first possibility that the vishoma of the pasuk is literal. We take a look at the Rosh commentary. The Omar Lay at the top line of the Rosh commentary on the side, he says, "The Omar Lay l'chishamana hafer lo klomar hafer lo uksha oshuv ve'eshma nidorah Takhu haforos cholamafreya. When you hear the vow, then you, the apotropos, annul it. And when I come back and hear that she made the vow, then your annulment shall take effect retroactively. The Gemara asks, L'chi shoma, when if you're making it dependent then on the husband's hearing of the vow, then lefer lohu, then let the husband himself be the one to mefer. Answer, as we saw before, Sovar Dilma Matridno. He figures that he might be preoccupied. And the Rosh says, Sovar Dilma Matridno, Shemo Kesheeshma Nidra. The husband is free. When I do actually hear the neder, Eya Torut V'Avur Hayom V'Lo Efrelo. The day will pass, and a husband's ability to mefer is only within the day itself that he hears of the vow. And I might be preoccupied at that time, and I won't do the hafa, I won't do the annulment. So, this way, by having the apotropos upon hearing the vow, the apotropos will annul it, and the husband, when he comes back and hears the vow, so the annulment of the apotropos will kick in retroactively. So at this point in the Gemara, we attempted to show that the Vishama is Lav Dafka, but at the conclusion, you can see we've come to the end of this discussion, the Vishama might very well be, yes, literal. That in order for any annulment to take place, there has to be an actual hearing of the vow. Boy Romi Bar Chamo, Cheresh Mahu Shiyofer Leishto. The term Cheresh, when referred to here, is a person who has the ability to speak, but he does not have the ability to hear. He cannot hear. He's deaf. So Romi Bar Chamo asks, a Cheresh, can he annul the vows of his wife? Imtim Selomar, if you say, Baal Mefer Belo Shmia, and this ties into the previous discussion. The previous discussion, we didn't necessarily come to a conclusion. So that allows us to raise as a possibility that that a Baal can Mefer, a husband can Mefer even without actually hearing. But why is that? Mishum debar mishmahu, because he is capable of hearing. He has his audio sense about him. He's able to hear. And therefore, since he's able to hear, potentially, he doesn't have to actually hear. Avo cheresh. But we're dealing with a deaf individual. The lav bar mishmahu, where he doesn't have even the potential of hearing. Hainu de Rebbe Zera. We would apply Rebbe Zera's principle to the case of the cheresh. And what's Rebbe Zera's principle? The Yomar Rebbe Zera, Kol haroi lebila ein bila makeves bo. V'chol she'ein roi lebila bila makeves bo. As far as Rebbe Zera is concerned, he has a principle. His principle was stated in a very specific case, which has to do with rules concerning menochas, meal offerings that were brought in the Beis HaMikdash, which were mixed with oil. And there's a certain oil-flour ratio that, without getting into the details, but the oil-flour ratio, in order for the mincha to be a kosher and acceptable mincha, must be an amount that if you were to mix the flour, literally mix the flour, knead the flour with the oil, there would be an even distribution of oil amongst the flour, in the flour. However, if there is so much flour that the amount of oil that the Torah provides for a meal offering is such that it wouldn't reach all of the flour, so it's an unacceptable mincha, it's an unacceptable meal offering. Rabbi Zera's rule states that if in potential the ratio is, we'll say, an acceptable ratio, that if you were to actually knead it, there would be an even distribution of oil in the flour, so you don't have to actually mix it. We know the potential is there. And that's roi labila. Bila means mixing up. Things that where the potential exists, you don't have to actualize that potential. However, if it's a flour oil ratio so great that even in potential, the distribution of oil in the flour cannot be achieved, so then we say that the actual mixing is a binding restrictive factor and it won't be a kosher mincha. So that's the first side of the analysis. So if you have a cheresh, a deaf husband, even if you say that a healthy husband doesn't have to actually hear the vow in order for the annulment to be effective, we cannot extrapolate from that law to a deaf individual. Because in a healthy husband, since the potential for hearing it exists, that's enough. He doesn't have to actually hear it. But the deaf husband, since in potential he can't hear it, so then we say, well, the hearing is a binding factor and he cannot annul. The Gemara goes on, oy dilma, or maybe v'shoma isha lo me'akev, or the fact that the pasuk says and her husband hears of the vow is simply not a restrictive binding need. And if you say it's not ma'akev, then the deaf husband would be able to annul the vow. Omar Rava. Rava answers, Toshma. The pasuk says, Vishoma Isha, Prat Li'eshes Cheresh. Here it's explicit that the deaf husband is excluded from the realm of those who can annul vows. Shma Mina. This is conclusive. Ibayalaho. A third and final question in the series of questions. And we have a topic heading on the side. It reads, Baal Mao Shiofer L'Shtei Nosha B'Vasachas. A man is married to two wives, and both wives vowed. Can the husband say a general hafara? In other words, he says mufar lachen. He says using the plural form, your vows are annulled. Or, as we'll see in the Gemara, he has to specify each wife separately. Now, in the Gemara text, ibaylo baal mashi ofer l'shtei nashim b'vasachas. Can a husband annul the vows of his two wives at once? And as we said, he would say mufar lochen. That expression you can see in the Ran commentary. Is that acceptable? Now, what's at the root of this question? The Gemara cites a word from the pasuk oisa, dafka oilav dafka. The word oisa. Now, on the side of our Gemara, we've included the pasuk Bamidbar Periklam and pasuk Tes. The pasuk says, "V'im v'yoyim shmoya isha yoni oisa v'hefer es nidra," etc. If on the day of the husband's hearing of the vow, he prevents osa her. Her is a reference to, it's a third person singular. So you have the word osa is a singular form, a singular form of speech. So the Gemara's question is oisa dafka, is that to be taken literally, that the absolution or the annulment must be in the singular form, oi lav dafka, or not necessarily? Omar Ravina, Toshma. So we try to resolve this by citing a Tanaic source. In this Tanaic source there are two opinions that appear. And the source, it does not deal with our topic, though. Our source, the source quoted here, deals with a sota. A sota is a married woman who is suspect of having behaved immorally, having experienced intimacy with another man. And in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, the issue of her guilt, because of the issue of doubt, was she immoral or not? That is resolved by the Sota ceremony, which involves the husband bringing the woman to the Beis Hamikdash, and she drinks water, and that will reveal whether or not she is guilty. There's an entire tractate, entire masechta, that deals with the topic of the sota, so there's no need for us to get into the details of the ceremony right now. But what we'll see in this source has to do with two women that are suspect and brought to the Beis Hamikdash. Just another word of background with regard to the sota and the ceremony in the Beis Hamikdash. There's a portion of the Torah that is written on parchment, and then the ink is scratched off or erased over water that she is made to drink. We would prefer that the woman confess her behavior before we erase the parsha, which in effect involves the erasing of the name of the Almighty in the process. We would prefer that she comes forth and admits if she in fact was guilty of immorality. She should say, yes, I am guilty, and we would stop the process then and there, sparing us of the need for erasing the name of Hashem. So there's a certain, we'll say, goal or hope of confession involved in this ceremony, at an early stage in the ceremony. So the source reads as follows: Omar Avina, Toshma, Ein Mashkin Shtei Soitis Kachas. One is not to bring two suspect women at the same time to the Beis Hamikdash, to the temple courtyard where the ceremony takes place. And why not? Mipnei shelibo gas b'chaverta. Because one woman, when she sees another woman there, it creates a sense of inner resistance, inner strength that would deter her from confessing. Had she been alone, she would have felt more sense of insecurity, if you will, less assuredness, and she would come forth with a confession. So according to the Tanakhama, the reason for not having the two soitas at the same time is a psychological consideration, not a scriptural consideration. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, loy min hashem huzeh, that's not the reason for objecting to the two soitas at the same time. In other words, not the psychological explanation, elo mishum shenara, but rather there is a scriptural reference, v'hishka oisa levado. Notice the word osa in the singular. The Torah demands that sotas are dealt with individually, not two at the same time. We glance at the Rosh commentary, the bottom line, elo mishum shenemar v'hishka oisa. Vishka mapike, there's a dot. If you were to write out the vowelization of the word vishka, there's a dot in the hey, ukilu ksiv vishka osa. It's as if it says, even though it just says vishka, but it's understood to mean vishka osa in the singular form. Vidarshinon, and we expound on this pasuk, veloy osa v'chaverta. And not she and someone else. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the fact that there's a singular word, that precludes the multiple phenomenon. What about the Tanakhama? Did he place emphasis on the singular word? No. He said that in this particular case of sotos, there's a need for confession, and there's, if there are two of them there, so that will deter her from confessing. But the singular word is not a binding factor in the mind of the Tanakhama. So with that in mind, the Rosh concludes, V'leimo pluktu de tanoihi. With this we could conclude that the question of what about a husband when it comes to annulling vows, the issue of two women, two wives at the same time, this would be a machlokas tanoim. According to the Tanakhama, the fact that the Torah speaks in the singular is not a binding factor. In the case of the Sota, we wanted them done singularly because of a specific, a local psychological consideration. That has nothing to do with husband absolving wives of vows. So in the case of vow absolution, two wives can be absolved at once. Rabbi Yehuda, though, says the presence of a singular word, a word indicating singularity, that itself is a binding factor. So wherever you see the word in the singular form, that must be taken seriously, whether it's the case of Sota or it's the case of absolution of vows, where you also have the word in the singular. What we have explained, as you can clearly see, is through the eyes of the Rosh, the Rosh's commentary, and we dashed underlined the concluding remark that he made by saying that the issue is a machlokes tanoim. I think it's noteworthy that if you look in the Ran, you will see a different approach to the matter. But for our Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shir, we want to leave you simply with the Rosh and saying that the conclusion would be that it's a machlokes tanoim. For other approaches, by all means, do look into the Ran. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.